Hello, everyone. Welcome to Season 12, Episode 32 of the Ubuntu Podcast. It's some day in November, and we're recording this crazy lunacy for you. And this will be the final episode with Mark, so relish it. He might be back next year, but then we never know. Anyway, this week we're going to be discussing distro hoppers and why they are the worst. We'll have some GUI love and some of your wonderful feedback. Thank you very much. And with me today is Martin. Hello, Martin.
Hello there. How are you?
Tickety boo. And Splitter Mark is also with us.
Not for long. Don't worry.
Excellent. What have you been up to then, Mark?
I have been enjoying the works of Philip Pullman.
Ah, is this print or video?
So I have been watching on TV this Sunday. His Dark Materials started on BBC One.
Oh, is that good?
Yes.
Yes, in a word. I have a few slight niggles with the series, but in general, I thought it was very well cast and very well presented and well paced as well, because the book is... it's a bit slow at the beginning to get everything in place, and they managed to sort of cram the right amount of stuff into the first episode that they can then get on with it. So I was very happy with that.
Is it like the kind of thing like trying to get Dirk Gently or Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy into a TV program, like trying to turn those kind of things? Is it difficult in that way?
Yeah. There's such rich stories. The books are very vibrant, very detailed. It's excellently written. It's a fantastic story with lots of subplots all woven together. So it's challenging from that point of view, like some of those things that you've just mentioned. You know, there's lots going on, and the people that like these books tend to really love them. So,
yeah.
And so for someone who's never read a book in his life, what should I watch the televisual entertainment program?
I would say it's worth a watch.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. You'll certainly enjoy it, but I would say it's worth learning to read to read the trilogy of books.
Yes.
Reading is overrated.
But also at the same time, I'm reading The Secret Commonwealth, which is a sequel to His Dark Materials, and that's also very good. And it's mostly set in Oxford as well, which is interesting. Well, it's set in an alternative universe version of Oxford.
I watched him interviewed in a documentary last night, I think it was, and he was explaining what it was about Oxford that stimulated his imagination to create these, you know, fantastical worlds and stories and all the rest of it. It was a terrific interview. So that's on iPlayer as well. For those of you in the UK, you can watch an interview with the author himself.
What have you been up to then, Martin?
I have been getting addicted to these Sedna SSD to PCI adapters.
Are these the things that you talked about before, where you sort of strap two discs onto it and stick it next to your graphics card?
That's right, except it gets better now. I've got two more of them, and both of them have four SSDs.
So it's just two on each side.
Yeah, so one of them is actual 2.5-inch SSDs. So it's a full-length card with four 2.5-inch SSDs on it, but all of the power and everything and connectivity is all off this one board. And the other one takes M.2 SATA SSDs. So that one's a little bit faster, but this is not about the speed. It's about having local, quiet, relatively fast storage for doing backups of my home directory and my workstation too. So if I make a mistake, I can quickly recover from that. And now we've got ZFS on the Ubuntu desktop.
You mean ZFS?
No, I don't. I can do local replication of my snapshots to these drives, so I can use ZFS to create a large volume of all of those drives together.
And do they all show up just as individual, you know, just a bunch of disks or?
Yeah, so Sedna have a couple of variations of each of these, and they tend to be the number of drives available and whether it comes with or without RAID. So I've been buying the ones without RAID controllers because they're about half the price, and I have no intention of using a hardware RAID feature. I'm going to be using ZFS.
And what sort of machine are these plugged into?
My desktop machine. So my desktop workstation only has one PCI slot filled currently, because I've just taken all of the others out, but that's the graphics card. And then I've got another 5 PCI slots that I can plug these storage drives into.
Wow, okay.
And one of them I've put 4 512 gigabyte SSDs on to create 2 terabytes of storage. And, you know, the SSDs that I've bought were end of line and discounted, so quite high volume of relatively fast storage at a decent price point.
I can't help but think, every time you talk about these PCI riser cards with discs on them, they just make me think of 1989 MFM hard drives on a card in an Amstrad PC 1640.
Yeah, and I think perhaps that's why I like them so much. There's a kind of a lovely nostalgia to these things.
On that bombshell, let's move on. We've been wanting to have this little discussion for a little while. We titled it Why Distro Hoppers Are the Worst, as a kind of clickbait, but it doesn't really work as clickbait because you're already listening. and I just want to preface this with, none of this is intended as a direct attack on any individual. None of this is intended as a slight on any user of any distro, and none of it is a slight on any distro specifically.
But
we have some opinions that we'd like to share with you. So first of all, like, you may not have heard the term distro hopper. You must live under a rock if that's the case. But if that is the case, climb out from under that rock. And a distro hopper is it essentially just someone who doesn't feel at home on any one distro and moves around, maybe?
Or are they the person that thinks the grass is always greener and they hop to distributions for that reason?
Maybe. Sometimes it's because stuff is busted. Like, oh, I installed version 1.2.3 of this distro and it had broken audio, so I switched to this other distro, and then 3 months later, the video driver is busted, and so I switched to some other distro, and they never quite get a place that they can feel is home, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the reason we wanted to talk about this is because there's an impact to this. There is a probably measurable, but I haven't measured it, impact to this, if someone wants to try and measure it, in that these people are moving from one distro to another, and because they don't feel at home on a distro, they probably, is my assertion, they don't contribute to that distro.
Mm.
And I would say if people stuck on a distro more, they'd be more likely to contribute to that distro because they felt a sense of agency and a sense of belonging and a sense of community with that distro, and therefore that distro would get better.
Yes, I think that's a fair assertion, and I have some evidence to support it.
Someone's done their research.
No, I haven't done research. I could get numbers. I'm not going to, but I could. Now, we see this sometimes. So in issue trackers for the Mate desktop, somebody will file a bug, and we're a small team, and eventually we'll get round to that bug. Maybe months have elapsed. And when we then start seeking additional information, it's remarkable how often the response is, oh, well, I've moved on. I'm not using Linux Mint Mate Edition. I'm now using Chaos. So I can't reproduce it. And we're like, well, we can't reproduce the issue because we don't have enough information. So we're just going to have to say, oh, well, we'll close this. And if somebody can resurrect it in the future, that would be helpful.
Right. That is a prime example. And I have seen that on Ubuntu as well. We've filed bugs and people have filed bugs and we go and triage them and they say, no, I moved on. I have seen that many times over the years. And that makes it a downward spiral, because if you close that bug, that user is going to get an email that says, you know, we marked your bug as invalid, or, you know, whatever it is, close the bug, won't fix, whatever the nomenclature on the bug tracker is, that bug is no longer important to us, is effectively what you're saying. And that user now gets the message that the time that they invested when they were on that distro and they filed a bug was pointless, because now you're not even going to fix it.
Yeah, we do have some dialogue and a pre-canned response to that. So we don't just close things, you know, without any reason. We do explain why.
No, sure. But can you see that that makes the distro measurably worse, because there are bugs there which just get closed? And, you know, I hear this sometimes from people who say it's pointless filing a bug because they never get fixed. Or I file a bug and then I get a reply 2 years later. You know, and that's a valid concern, because there aren't enough eyeballs looking at these bugs. There aren't enough developers. And if you stuck around and helped, maybe that would fix that, help fix that.
There's a related issue, I think. There's a connection here in that, because distro hoppers are in the habit of installing distros, it's one area of Linux life they are highly skilled in. You'll often find that distro hoppers know far more about multi-booting systems and, you know, disk partitioning and all of that than anybody else, which is fantastic. But because they're comfortable with just constantly blowing away installations, they tend to promote the new compave, you know, approach to, oh, well, you know, no, you don't upgrade. You just new compave. And the problem there is that then we don't get enough good quality testing on the upgrade processes either.
Right. And that's a downward spiral of hell, because they then tell everyone don't upgrade. And that then perpetuates the myth that upgrades don't work. And that's perpetuated by the fact that you're not upgrading. you're actually making that. Well, I've lamented about this and got angry about this many times over the years. And I find that frustrating as well. Is it selfish? Are these people selfish?
I don't think they're deliberately selfish. I think that, I mean, it doesn't fulfill the old social contract of, you know, contributing to open source projects, which is, you know, when you encounter issues, as a good citizen, you report bugs and try and, you know, engage in the process and, you know, improve things. And if everyone does that, then things do improve and work together.
Right, but I've heard people say, "I'm under no obligation to do that. If you want people to contribute, you should make them, or you shouldn't give it away for free." Like Microsoft don't make you contribute to it. Apple don't make you contribute. They offer you the option to press a button that sends some statistics that may or may not help with the product, but you never know because you've got no access to the data.
No. But you've paid for those products as well.
Well, no, you don't. You don't pay for OS X. It comes with the machine, and Windows 10 comes with the machine. Like the people, okay, you could argue that there is a portion of the amount you spent that goes to those companies, right? But from a user's perspective, they didn't pay for it.
It's true.
Well, you talk about them being selfish, and in a way, I think you're right in that what they're doing might just be what interests them. They might not be interested in getting involved in a particular distro in a community and contributing to that community. They might just be interested in trying out lots of different versions of Linux and understanding how they work and how they relate to one another and what it's like to install them differently. That might just be what gives them the kick from using Linux, rather than sticking on one desktop and one distro and, you know, having a set of packages installed and using them every day. That might not be what actually interests them about computing.
Right. And I think you're right. And I think that is the, shall we say, the acceptable face of distro hopping is think of those people for whom Linux is just a hobby. It's not their workstation. They're not sat at a machine doing their job every day. Like if you think about someone who is, I don't know, works in the field, works in the land, isn't sat at a computer, but they might come home to a computer either in the evening if they're not too tired, or maybe at the weekend. They've got a limited amount of time and they just want to play with something. They don't necessarily want to get involved, like you say. Those people, you know, trying to convince them to contribute when they have other more important things in their life is difficult.
And I mean, this was kind of, it's kind of how I got into Linux in the first place. You know, I had a spare hard drive plugged into my parents' PC. And, you know, if I actually needed to do stuff or if I wanted to play games, I just had their Windows installation that I used. But if I was using Linux, I was usually installing something and having a look at it for a couple of days and then breaking it and then installing something else to find out, you know, what they'd done differently. Or,
but I think everyone goes through that phase, or a lot of people go through that phase of, you know, just tinkering and installing and reinstalling and reinstalling and, you know, getting confident with it. But once you get that confidence, why not just, you know, leave those bits on your hard drive and actually use them? Like, use it to create music, use it to write documents, use it to browse the web, to actually use the thing rather than going, you know, well, I don't like this color scheme, wipe it and install a completely new operating system. It just feels like throwing out the baby with the bathwater every time.
So I do agree that if you are distro hopping in order to learn more about Linux, then I think that's perfectly acceptable. That's it is a great way to learn. And if you're moving between distributions with different origins, you'll learn different things, because depending on whether it's descended from Slackware or Debian or Red Hat, then, you know, there are things about the system that will be different. Or maybe a desktop environment that you want to try out and learn about is only available through a particular distribution and you switch to it to try that out. And that's also fine. But I do agree with this idea of, like, find your comfortable place and then use your computer to be, you know, productive. I like the fact that people are tinkerers and may install different versions just for fun, like you described.
Oh, sure.
But I don't like this. This stopped working for me, therefore I'm just going to have a Paddy and install a random distro to make it go away.
Yeah. I don't know. Part of me thinks that right now there are people shouting into their podcast players saying, you know, how dare you, Alan? That's so arrogant. You think we're all like you. You think we can all contribute. You know, I don't want, maybe I don't want to, or maybe I can't, or I don't feel that I can. I don't feel skilled enough to contribute. And I appreciate that. I understand that feeling of not feeling empowered enough to contribute, or not feeling empowered enough to contribute to the thing you want to fix. So, for example, if you install distro A and you're not getting the number of frames per second in your game and you switch to distro B, or you try distro B and distro B has a higher frame rate in your game, why would you bother reinstalling distro A in order to report that? Like, everyone is selfish in some ways and they want to play the game. They don't necessarily want to contribute to distro A. They might tweet or write a blog post. I mean, but that's a stretch. What's more likely is they just switch and never tell anyone. And the people who make that distro, who want distro A to have the same frame rate as distro B, but don't even know that this is a problem.
Well, exactly that. And the other thing is that if you find a problem like that and you don't know how to solve it, so you switch distributions to avoid the problem, you're not going to get yourself in a position where you're ever going to learn how to solve that problem, because you're just avoiding the problem by, you know, switching distributions as you encounter problems.
Right.
And maybe sticking around and actually, you know, learning the scope of the problem and how to report it, you may get more enjoyment and become more proficient and have less requirement to keep jumping around.
And for the avoidance of doubt, I'm not saying everyone should be on Ubuntu. It doesn't matter which distro you land on. Everyone else who's on that distro, if you contributed to that distro, all of the other people that you may have some kinship with, or you know, you feel you're part of that community, they will benefit, like, for your contribution as well. It doesn't matter which distribution that is, you know. If you're running a desktop that's running GNOME and you report a bug that gets fixed in GNOME, everybody wins. And if you're on a distro that's running KDE and you find a bug in KDE, everyone wins. It's like, you know, it doesn't matter which distro it is, but when you find a home, it just feels, I don't know, but it's weird for me because I've been running Ubuntu since 2005, 2004, and I have never switched distro. I've tried lots of them. I've got oodles of them installed, but I just can't. Maybe it's because I feel at home in Ubuntu.
Yeah.
And even though stuff's busted, like I file bugs, go and have a look at my Launchpad account. You'll find lots of bugs that I've filed, many of which have never been fixed. But so what? Like, what are you supposed to do? Like, it's not like I've paid for this thing and I'm expecting some, you know, how dare this bug not be fixed?
Yeah.
I just can't fathom the attitude that, you know, I don't care enough to contribute, and I don't want to contribute. I don't know.
Yeah, the contribution aspect, irrespective of whether you're a distro hopper or not. I mean, you know, there are people out there that have been on the same distribution for years and years and years and have never contributed in any way whatsoever.
Sure.
I mean, is that good, bad, or indifferent?
Well, with something like Ubuntu, you know, Ubuntu has millions of users who are, you know, going and buying computers that are running Ubuntu and just using it as their home PC. They're not going to necessarily think about contributing to it as a project, are they? They just want to use it.
True.
But the problem is that audience is so huge that the number of people who will contribute, you know, it's always that like 5% of people who contribute and 95% who don't in every distro, right? And when you're in a mainstream store like the Dell, you know, website, you're going to have people who are not inclined to contribute. And I think it's okay. You know, they've done their contribution. They've bought a machine. We get a little bit of money for that. Thanks very much. So they've shown support for open source. Dell have now heard that that user has purchased a machine. That clocks one up on the little meter that says how many people are buying open source based laptops. You know, that is in some ways a contribution. Going and downloading an ISO and putting it on a machine and then using it every day and never telling anyone and never supporting anyone and never advocating or anything. No, there's no contribution there. But I think that's fine. It's fine for some people to not contribute. But the problem I have is that these distro hoppers are almost all technical people. Like Martin said, they have intimate knowledge of all these different installers. They know how to partition disks. They're actually quite technical people, but they won't contribute.
Is part of the problem here the fact that so many distros exist in the first place? If you're new to Linux, you don't necessarily think, oh, you need to find one and stay on it. You might think, oh, well, there's so many because I'm supposed to try them all.
There's a paralysis of choice.
Yeah, yeah. Is that a thing? Do people just see all of the distros and think, this can't possibly be the best there is because there's 827 others that I could be using?
Well, yeah, it could be. And, you know, you have sites like DistroWatch and you have, you know, lots of YouTubers talking about installing different things and new versions coming out all the time. You know, it might seem to someone who's not already invested in the community that's, you know, that's the way of it.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously there are people out there who are, yeah, it's their job to switch distro. You know, if they're running a YouTube channel where they're reviewing different distros, then that's part of their role to get immersed in different distros and try them all out. But I'm pretty sure those people have a base machine that has something on it somewhere.
Yeah, and it was the same, you know, when I used to buy Linux Format, they'd have a different distro on the cover every couple of issues, and you know, you'd always see releases like, and you'd get a cover disc with a new version of something on it, and maybe even two or three different distros on there. So of course you're going to think, well, I should be trying all of these to see why I'm getting them in the first place.
Right.
But of course people writing the magazines were probably, you know, running Mac OS or something.
Fair point. I'm keen to hear from our listeners on this. You know, am I completely off base here? Is this something we shouldn't be worrying about? Or should we be doing something to encourage these people to stick wherever they found themselves? Should we be encouraging them to stick where they are and try and contribute to whatever distro it is they found as home? I'm super interested to learn what our listeners think. So do get in touch via all the usual channels.
If you love the command line as much as we do, send us a command that will blow our minds, and we might even mention it on the show. Send your command line love to show@ubuntupodcast.org.
We have a type of love, apparently.
Yes, it's a gooey love this week.
Is this one of yours, Martin?
This is one of mine. In fact, I got this gooey love from our colleague, Claudio, who was the only person to turn up at the enforced fun time meeting last week, I'll have you all know.
I was on holiday.
Not an excuse. it's enforced fun time.
I had to explain to my children that there is an event in my calendar on a Thursday afternoon called Enforced Fun Time. They didn't believe me. I had to show them my calendar to prove it. I'm like, okay.
Anyway, during enforced fun time, which was fun, Claudio was showing me he's got this third massive monitor on the wall above his other monitors. And I was like, what have you got on it? So he got his webcam and turned it round. And he'd got a world clock up there of all of his colleagues around the world, so he knew what time it was. And I was like, what is that? I like that. And it's GNOME clocks. So it's in the archive, apt install gnome-clocks. And it does some useful things like setting an alarm or timers and stopwatches. But you can also add clocks for different regions of the world. And I've now added it to cater for all of our teams that, you know, we work with regularly, who are based in New Zealand, the east and west coast of Australia, the east and west coast of America, throughout Europe. So I can now see at a glance what time it is in different places and figure out if it's reasonable to contact them or not. It's really handy.
Huh. That's really quite cool. And it shows background images of like what kind of time of day it is. So it shows like a sky with little stars in it if it's nighttime, and a daylight if it's daytime. So you can just at a glance see whether it's day or night in the various locations, as well as seeing the time.
So I just have this running on a workspace and I can just whiz over to it and see what the time is everywhere in the world where I want to speak to people. It's great.
That's really nice. Thanks, Claudio.
We love getting your feedback. If you've got a comment about something you hear on the show, why don't you drop us an email on show@ubuntupodcast.org?
And now we have time for some of that wonderful feedback. Drew emailed us, show@ubuntupodcast.org.
I was listening to episode 29 today, and I couldn't help but mention that there's one very special thing about Regolith that needs to be pointed out. It runs on top of the GNOME settings daemon to provide underpinnings for things like networking and other things you would otherwise have to set up manually. It's quite a nice distro, and I'm certain that Ken would love to speak to you about getting this up as an official flavour.
Oh, that would be awesome.
It certainly would.
I like how Drew says, I was listening to episode 29. What he actually means is I was editing episode 29. Drew works for the lovely people at Jupiter Broadcasting, and he is one of the people who edits our show. Thank you, Drew, for the feedback. Julian left a comment on our website.
In regards to 2004 LTS, my personal wish list has only one item. I would like to be able to drag and drop files to and from the desktop once again. I make regular use of desktop icons for stuff I'm currently working on, and having to open desktop in the file manager every time I want to quickly drop a file somewhere else has become a major, I assume that was meant to say inconvenience, not incontinence. And, in my opinion, a terrible user experience. While I like the overall workflow of Ubuntu's modified GNOME desktop, this is the one thing that really pushes me to return to KDE Plasma.
He also says, sorry if I come across a bit angry. I love the show. Keep up the good work. Oh, it doesn't look angry on my screen.
No, it doesn't here either. I think it's a fair comment.
It is. It is. It's one of those things that you don't realize how much you use it until it goes away. And then you're like, oh. And you then have to change your workflow slightly, and you know, a few extra steps involved just to move a file around, and that, yeah, I can see how that could be frustrating. Fix it, Martin.
Yeah, duly noted.
David Norman from Down Under emailed us.
When it comes, I'm not going to do the accent. Or should I?
No.
I did once. All right, okay, I went. When it comes to GPUs, it seems there's a lot of focus on NVIDIA and how their drivers are being included in the ISO and this and that. But I never hear mention of AMD. Is there a reason for that? Does NVIDIA work better with Ubuntu? Why do I never hear about AMD on any episodes? Okay, these are good questions. I think the main reason that there's some attention given to NVIDIA is in the discrete GPU space, particularly on Ubuntu, NVIDIA is dominant there. And the Ubuntu report statistics will show you that. Now, times are a-changing, and there's certainly some adoption of the new generation of AMD GPUs, particularly for gamers, because it's an attractive price point and the performance is decent. Their drivers, however, are open source, despite the blobs that come in the firmware, but the drivers themselves are open source, so they tend to be just there already. But we will be giving some focus to AMD and spreading the love around a little bit in the future, so watch this space.
And also, the reason I never mention it is because I have zero AMD GPUs. So that's why I never talk about it. You have one in your Steambox, don't you, Mark?
I still do have, it's an AMD APU, so it's got a fully fledged graphics chip on the CPU, but I now actually have an NVIDIA discrete graphics card as well, because basically it's more powerful. It's a bit awkward with my Steambox because it's in a low profile case. It's difficult to find decent GPUs, which are also low profile. An NVIDIA-based manufacturer released one a couple of years ago, so that's why I'm now using that.
I don't need to ask Martin which GPU he has, because he has all of them. Ian, also from Down Under, emailed us.
Congrats to Martin for his appointment as desktop manager.
Keep going.
Also nice to hear from Stuart Langridge once again. I haven't heard from him since the Log Radio days. Maybe you could get John O'Bacon on as a guest if he's still in the business.
Very well done. And this is your last episode, isn't it, Mark?
For many reasons.
We should probably point out to Ian that if he's not aware, there's a podcast called Bad Voltage that Stuart and Jono are both on today. So you might want to look up the Bad Voltage podcast if you're missing Stuart and Jono.
I do very much enjoy that podcast.
And Jono, just to give him a super plug, he also has a little podcast which is called In Conversation with Bacon, which he hosts on his own website. If you just search for In Conversation with Bacon, you'll find it. And he's interviewed and had chats with some interesting people from the tech sphere, as it were, including Jeff Atwood, who started Discourse and Stack Exchange and a few other things. There's some interesting people he's interviewed, and Jason Warner, who used to have your job, Martin, at Canonical as the desktop manager. Yeah, so go and track him down. Mads Kjellgaard.
Oh, very good.
Is it Kjellgaard?
Yeah, that seems reasonable.
Emailed us. I'm sorry, Mads.
I'm a pro audio person, and I recently switched from macOS to Ubuntu Studio after many years using the former. All in all, it has been a pleasant transition, apart from the lack of support from audio interface companies. I'm happy to report that doing demanding pro audio on this is a breeze. What made me finally take the plunge was seeing my favourite digital audio workstation, Reaper, pick up native Linux support and doing it well. I would like to hear any suggestions for guides or introductions to the more general underlying system. I'm a command line native, and I sort of understand how things are organized on Linux, but I realize more and more how large the holes in my understanding are. Can you recommend a book or article or video taking on this large subject in a nice way?
That sounds like a question we should ask the audience. I would be keen to hear from our listeners what kind of steps you would take your next step in learning on Linux in the way that Mads wants to. I think that would be very useful. And if we get some good resources, we can put them in the show notes of a future episode.
I'm sure Linux Academy have some resources that would help.
Yeah, probably.
You're fired.
Can we find Mark instead? Ian Forbes emailed us.
Further to your comments on season 12, episode 30, I do not use KDE Connect.
Well played, Ian.
Thank you. That's the end of all of your feedback.
And that's all for episode 32. Myself and Martin, not Mark, will see you all next week, where we'll have the usual news, community and other nonsense. And if you would like to buy some Linux training, I can highly recommend the wonderful people over at Linux Academy. That's Linux Academy.
com.
Do you think that'll get me out of it?
Maybe.
Oh, crikey. Thank you to Drew also for editing this show and making me sound good.
Who does he work for?
That's Linux Academy.